Hello, guys. You're listening to Beauty Bites with Dr. K, Secrets of a Plastic Surgeon. And today's podcast is going to blow your mind. We're going to talk the nitty-gritty about all things legal and lawful and what to do in your practice, what not to do in your practice. We're introducing Sarah Schickman. This is part two. We did a really great part one podcast. I encourage you to go back and find it. But there's so much new technology, and the molecular biology of aging is happening before our eyes, and people are doing crazy stuff out there, Sarah. It's the Wild West. Welcome to the podcast, and tell us about your legal background a little bit.
Sure. My name is Sarah Schickman. I've been a lawyer since 2007. I worked at some big firms and I started a med spa that grew to 12 locations. And then in 2019, I started this law firm called Lingea Law. And we really focus on the aesthetic industry and we represent over 1,500 practices in this space with everything from helping people start to helping people sell to helping people resolve really difficult patient issues or staff issues, or doing products that they're not supposed to be doing issues. So we specialize in being the fixer to our clients and also the guide to help people not make mistakes in the first place.
I love that. You are a boss girl with 16 years or more of law experience and then running basically a multi-million dollar venture with this big spa chain as well as the e-commerce that they're doing. So I think you must have seen lots of regulatory issues. What right now are some big red flags in the medical spa industry?
I think one emerging issue is GLP-1s and their change from being on the FDA shortage list to not being on the FDA shortage list. So previously, semaglutide and tirzepatide were on the FDA shortage list, which meant that compounding pharmacies could essentially make a copy of them and sell them to med spas. So even though there were these brand name drugs like Ozempic and Mounjaro, because they were on the shortage list, compounding pharmacies could make the generic versions and sell them. But now they are off the shortage list. So technically, compounding pharmacies, depending on what type of compounding pharmacy they are, 503A or 503B, they have until either April 22nd of this year or May 22nd of this year. So really soon, to stop production of these compounds. And there's a big lawsuit going on between the compounders, the FDA, and the makers of the brand name drugs. But as of today, despite the lawsuit, these deadlines stand. So people are going to have to make big changes to their medical weight loss programs. Otherwise, they're going to get sued by these big manufacturers. And they've already begun the lawsuits and cease and desist letters. Many of our clients have gotten these letters and we're in the process of responding to them. But that's only the first step. We have clients in like multi-hundred thousand dollar lawsuits with these brand name manufacturers. And they're refusing to settle. So it's really important to make that change in for people's practices. Otherwise, it's not going to really be the FDA who comes after you. It's going to be these big manufacturers who are arguing, hey, we spent $5 billion developing these drugs. We're protecting our investment, and they have a right to do that.
Yeah, so the big pharma companies are not willing to settle. They're gonna go after you little the small med spa practice that's like doing their best to give shots to patients and helping them lose weight. You think you're immune because you're a small potato, but you're not, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and they can pursue you for any amount of money, I guess.
Right. In the United States, anyone can sue anyone for anything at
Yeah.
any time. So what these companies are doing, it's kind of scary, right? They're having a lawsuit and they're basically saying, we're demanding $500,000, $1 million from these small companies. And these kind of lawsuits typically are not covered by your insurance.
They're
So
not, yeah, because
they're not.
it's off-label to use compounded products, right?
Right. It's off label to use compounded products. A lot of people never even got those compounded products added to their insurance policy in the first place. And even if they did, maybe the way they are advertising it isn't exactly correct. So the pharmaceutical company is coming after them for that, for trademark infringement, which is not covered by insurance typically. So the pharma companies are essentially hiring firms to scour the internet for anyone advertising weight loss programs, no matter what words people are using, GLP-1, tirzepatide, whatever, and they're sending the cease and desist letters.
So yeah, when that announcement came out, Hims and Hers, their stock prices plummeted like 40%, and like companies that now have built their brand on doing compounded and expensive weight loss shots, what's the advice for them? Like cease and desist, stop what you're doing and take note, or is there a way to turn that around, do you think?
I think that one thing they can do is transition to providing like a plan
Prescription.
that's not just weight loss, but or not just compounded drugs, but the brand name drug plus some kind of nutritional counseling, plus let's say in-office body contouring or wrinkle relaxers or whatever, so that they're selling something, let's say for $500, 250 of that is going to Eli Lilly for the brand name drug, and then the other 250 is going to them for the other things. So they have to change the business model, I think. I don't see a way to legally buy from compounding pharmacies after this deadline.
I don't know why I don't see more people freaking out about this, because they're not. No one is freaking out. The people I know are just status quo and they think they're going to be fine.
I think that they're waiting until last minute. Their plan, a lot of people's plan is to bulk order as much as they can right now and just keep it in their fridge and hope that the Biden stick
It, yes.
fire. But that's a really a temporary solution. Like maybe that'll get someone through the end of the year. Best case scenario, as long as the product doesn't expire, as long as it was compounded and the prescription was written for that patient before latest May 22nd. But I think that's not enough. I think a lot of people will get in trouble just because the budget that these pharmaceutical companies have for going after people is virtually unlimited. At the end of the day, that's what it comes down to, like who has the bigger budget.
And there's no argument to be made for like it's you're just maintaining patient care. You don't want to change their treatment plan. You don't want to suddenly switch them to a new drug that they may not tolerate when they've shown good results with one compound.
No. The pharmacy, that's a really good question, but the pharmaceutical companies would argue, well, their drug is the one that's FDA approved and is the safer drug. So if anything, now that it's available, you should be switching people to what's considered tested and proven and safe. So
And what's
yeah.
the difference for the audience to know between 503A and 503B? You mentioned like two different deadlines. What's the difference in those type of compounding pharmacies, which people should also for buying peptides and IV solutions, et cetera?
Yeah, so one is a traditional compounding pharmacy, which is a 503A, and the deadline for that is April 22nd. One is called an outsourcing facility that allows you to buy for like office use and bigger quantities, and that has a deadline of May 22nd. And they're inspected and regulated differently.
And this is going to be a nationwide issue. It's not state specific. Or are states going to be able to regulate this how they want at the state level?
Great question too. It's gonna. This is a federal issue because it deals with the FDA, and the FDA is a federal agency. But the state boards of pharmacy are all different in every state. So some state boards of pharmacy may even do inspections to make sure people are compliant with this. And some state boards of pharmacy may not do much about it. So it is going to be enforced a little bit differently at a state level. But from I don't think the biggest kind of bear in the room is going to be the State Board of Pharmacy or the FDA. The biggest threat to this is going to be the Eli Lilly and Novo Nordisk, and those are going to go after people in every state.
Yeah, that's definitely going to make people need to change their business models because this year, I think so many people grew their practices by 20, 30% of their profit margins came from weight loss shots.
Yeah, and I mean it's a good business, right? Because it's something that somebody needs for forever, essentially. So the definition of recurring revenue, but yeah, I think at least for now it's going to have to change.
What other changes do you foresee coming up this year legislatively? I've heard some rumors that certain states are really clamping them down on credentialing for injectors or, really defining the borders of who can and can't manage patient care and inject independently.
Yeah, some states are doing that, and they have been trying to do that for a long time. So, for example, New Mexico passed something in 2024 that talks about, okay, what credentials you need to have, what training you need to have to be an aesthetic injector as an RN. I think states are kind of slow to do that. And a lot of states have proposals somewhere in the legislature, but nothing like super close to, almost being passed. I do see more and more states giving independent practice authority to NPs. So I do think that in this year, there'll be more states that are doing that. One other change I see is a lot of states are changing what estheticians can and cannot do and defining, like, can they do microneedling, for example. But there hasn't been a lot more definition of, let's say, what training is required to be an injector to officially, like, in your own place, which is surprising to me. I think that as adverse events happen, there's always more regulation. But 2024 wasn't a year of like lots of big adverse events. I do think the whole environment in 2025, and I don't know if you feel the same, seems to be like a little bit more like unhinged than 2024 in terms of like people's sentiment and what's going on politically. And so I do think 2025 will be a more volatile year with things happening. I mean, we had, I don't know, 100 new executive orders already, or I'm not sure how many, but it may be much more than that. So I do think there will be more change happening. At the same time, people from lots of governments are getting laid off. So I'm not sure who's going to be around to make those changes. So I think 2025 is going to be a complicated year.
I think so. I think also in aesthetics, I feel that the industry took a little hit with the little filler fear and, people getting away from an overfilled look. Also, this huge launch into exosome and regenerative hype with polynucleotide salmon sperm exosome, like very interesting new molecular ways of treating aging, but also very Wild West out there. So I wanted to talk a little bit about what are your thoughts on regulatory when it comes to exosomes? So exosomes are these little extracellular vesicles. They contain DNA and RNA messaging that once it's applied topically through a microneedling hole can get in there and teach your own cells with cellular messaging to behave younger and repair and regenerate faster. But they come from many different sources. So I think one controversy is where do they come from? Are they ethically derived? Another controversy being that none of these come, almost none, no companies make autologous or your own source products. And then also how their FDA approval is just for certain, they don't have FDA approval. They're only cosmeceuticals approved for topical use. So, but I see them being used everywhere, everyhow, even intravenous. Giving them as injectables into the face and also as microneedling treatments.
Yeah, I had a friend whose family member was like essentially dying from cancer, and they ordered something for, like, exosomes and stem cells to inject for thousands of dollars per vial, as a supposed cure. So I think there are all these kind of things happening that are scary. But I also think that there are a lot of products out there, like PDGF, for example, where, let's say, they're FDA approved for injection somewhere in the body. Then if you're injecting them in somebody's face, then what you're doing is, in a way, off label, but not totally illegal. And we do off label stuff all the time, like with Sculptra and Botox and all these other things. So I think there's that, which on a spectrum of safe versus unsafe is much safer than taking something like exosomes or salmon sperm or whatever and injecting that, where if there isn't an FDA approval for it to be injected anywhere in the body in the US, you're kind of on your own if there's ever an adverse event and the person says to you, like, hey, like, you weren't supposed to be doing this. Of course, with consents, you could disclaim some of that liability, but they may argue it was unreasonable for you to say, that I consent to this, even if I agreed to it, because it's not medically, like, in a reasonable doctor would not do the same thing.
That's so interesting. And the company that, of course, Sarah's referring to is Ariessence. I think they do it. extremely beautiful research, 25 years of using that product, safely, and 140 publications, human use. So the fact that it is FDA approved for human use for orthopedic and oromaxillofacial indication makes me feel very comfortable to use it for face, potentially for injections, or for microneedling and for off-label.
Yeah,
So
it's doing Sculptra in the, in the
in
butt,
the
right?
butt, exactly.
With
Something we
face.
do every day in California, right here in my office. We do so much of that. But we do have very, really detailed consent forms. I know that patients don't read, but we do at least put that out there. So your advice would be just make sure we're using great consenting, detailed informed consent forms.
Yeah, and we've had situations where the consent is detailed, but for example, doesn't mention that this is not an FDA approved treatment, doesn't explicitly say it's not FDA approved, it's not even approved for injecting, and you understand the risk of that. And then use that or the lack of that language to say, this is unsafe, give me
Yeah.
$10,000.
I think patients need to be a little bit more careful because when they go in to see a doctor, they don't know. Number one, they don't know what an exosome is. Number two, they don't ask the right questions. Where did it come from? How sterile is this sterile product or not sterile? What's the shelf life? How much activity do these molecules have? And also, the big question to me is, do they turn on, like, as growth factors, can they turn on cancerous processes in the body? And we actually don't know the answer to that. So an ideal consent form should kind of really explain all of that to the patient.
Definitely.
Yeah. Have there been already cases of lawsuits related to exosomes, polynucleotide, salmon sperm?
Not actual lawsuits that I've seen that made it to court, but we've been involved representing practices where there have been settlements. So essentially, patients said, I'm going to sue you for this. And then we facilitated a settlement before court. So yeah, there have definitely been threats of lawsuits.
And
A lot
what
of
were the claims of problems, if we can
Yeah,
ask?
so the claims of problems were sometimes with some of these products, like people would develop some redness, bruising, swelling. Whereas if they were getting a product that, was a little bit better understood or was FDA approved for that thing, they could say, well, look, this bruising is one of the side effects known for this product. But here they were arguing, well, I didn't know the bruising was going to be this severe, or the swelling was this severe, or even if you wrote in the consent that it's going to be hyperpigmentation, well, my cheek is red. Is that really hyperpigmentation or not? So people were very nitpicky in the consent versus what happened to them.
No, interesting. And is that you feel going to be like a common strategy? Because that's
I
an
do. I think people can go into ChatGPT, put in their, consent, all right, and be like, what I'm seeing is this on my face. Does this consent cover this 100%?
yeah.
Draft me an argument that it doesn't.
Oh my gosh, that's awful.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. Well, that's all the more reason we have to protect ourselves so carefully. I know last year there was a death related to IV hydration where a patient got an incorrect dose, or it was in Texas, patient either got a very high dose of potassium or something like that was administered that shouldn't have been. But what are the concerns as far as like clinics that are staffing themselves with very inexperienced kind of workers who have maybe they have an RN credential, but they really have nothing to do with this field, and maybe they're just filling in for the day as a day shift person.
Yeah, that's very scary and very, very risky. And I mean, it's super dangerous to patients. And it's really hard to prove that you met the minimum standard of care if that's how you're staffed. If your medical director is in, California and you're in New York, yeah, technically there's no requirement that the medical director reside in New York. But if there's no way for you to reach them and for them to talk to you, and you only did, a 3-hour class, it's going to be really hard for you to defend a malpractice suit if something happens.
Yeah, unfortunately, people don't ask those questions when they're going in to get treatments. Like, they don't chit chat with the nurse. How long have you been here? I mean, how long have you been doing this type of treatment? Because they may
I
not
mean,
like the answers.
I do. I'm
You
like, I'm,
do?
yeah, but I don't usually say that I'm an attorney because right away, if I say that, then, like, the room goes quiet, and so.
They clam up. Yeah, I think conversationally, I'm always asking even the oral hygienist or the dentist or whoever, hairstylist, like, how long have you been doing this, right? But people don't ask for their IV. They assume a certain level of credentialing is a certain level of expertise in it. I want to just say it's absolutely not.
Right. And IVs can be super dangerous. I mean, you're putting something directly in your blood. I mean, I don't have to be a, a plastic surgeon to know that that seems like that could kill you in an instant.
I know, honestly, yeah, definitely. Well, let's talk a little bit about it is difficult in practice handling online reputation and reviews and the social media. So I'd love to hear your thoughts on any new or trending problems in social media and online reviews.
Yeah, there are a lot of new and trending problems in that space. I think that increasingly, I think due to like social media and online stuff, people don't want to have a direct conversation sometimes with their provider, like, or they're scared, or they don't want to even make that call, or they make one call. Let's say we've dealt with this many times where someone has a small adverse event. They're not happy. They call the practice at 6 p.m. on a Friday. Nobody answers the phone. They leave a voicemail. By Monday, they leave like 20 bad reviews wherever they can leave, and they post on Reddit about how this practice is terrible. Whereas in the old days, they would have given people a reasonable chance to make things right. Here, I think people feel. I don't know. People feel empowered by the internet, I guess, to like lash out in this big way against very small things. So people are much more likely, I think, these days to leave a bad review than they were before.
And then, are there some guidelines you recommend practices to follow to get reviews that are compliant?
Yeah, I think so. I think one way, and this worked for us when we had our practice, was without even asking people for reviews, suggests for them to leave a review. Meaning, we would have these big pictures in the office of people's before and afters, like on canvas prints. And then we would also have pictures of people's reviews from Google and Yelp and other places. So that would suggest to people that it's nice to leave a review without ever asking people to leave a review. So it would be like, Amy Smith from Arkansas says, Dr. Smith is the greatest person ever. And then that would give the idea to somebody in the waiting room, oh, maybe I should leave a review too. Or you could have a little sign or a QR code saying, we'd love your feedback in the office, and people could leave a review that way. A good practice would be after every appointment, right, to text people or email them their post-treatment instructions and also asking for feedback. And then as part of that, asking people to, if they feel like they have a minute, to leave a review. Technically, per Google's policies, you can't just be sending that to your happy clients only. But in practice, that's what people do.
Talk a little bit about using people's images on social media or any new problems that you've heard about in social media.
To use somebody's image on social media, you have to have their consent. And if you're reposting somebody's image on social media that you found on somebody else's Instagram or TikTok, you still need to have their consent because technically they may have given their consent to practice A. And if you are reposting it, that could be a big problem. Another thing that's happening is there are these companies that look for images online that are copyrighted. So we all have seen some of these like lip filler video images where it's like small lips, bigger lips, even bigger lips that you could buy an iStock photo. Well, if you didn't buy your image from iStock Photo and you just put it on your website or on your Instagram, the owner of that image can hire a law firm to come after you for a copyright infringement. So you have to be really careful. There are law firms who specialize in just this. So that's one. The other thing, if it's an actual patient and you use their image without their express consent in writing, they can come after you as well. Another thing that comes up is people use influencers and post the influencers' videos and stories and whatever. Make sure you have a really good contract with your influencers. Make sure one of the provisions there is they can't work with your competitors for some number of weeks, months, whatever makes sense for you. We've had situations where a client worked with an influencer, signed a contract, the influencer did stuff for them, they paid the influencer a lot of money, and then a month later, the influencer went and did the same thing with another med spa. which really dilutes the brand, what they're trying to do. So,
Happens all the time. And I don't, you can't even, like, how do you even enforce an influencer contract? Like, yeah, they're deficient. They didn't do their posting. They went to another provider. And then what? Like, are you going to say something to them? Or just
right,
take
exactly.
them to small claims court? What am I doing?
Yeah, so it's better for influencer contracts too, to your point, to have it be paid over time. So like not like, okay, we pay you 10,000 or give you 10,000 of free treatments up front and then you do X, Y, and Z, but to make it incremental so that it's not, you pay them and then they have to do stuff and then they don't do stuff and you're scared to do anything to them because they're an influencer.
Yeah, it's challenging to work with them because you have to decide, are you really going to go after that person? Because sometimes they will become very negative publicly about you later. Yeah.
Right.
So I don't know. I've evolved my practice a lot. In the beginning, we did a lot of influencer things, and now not so much. It's just more a lot of work. But I
And
agree
it
with you. The
starts
consents
what?
are so critical, right? Making a good consent form is so critical.
Yeah. And influencers are complex and they have complicated lives sometimes, and it's hard for them to like fulfill the obligations of the influencer contract.
Yeah.
They're busy living their best lives.
Skipping around a little bit, I wanted to ask you, like, how much supervision do people need in practice? Like, does it really vary state to state? Some states allow medical assistants or estheticians or beauticians to do things if they're under a physician supervision, or even if they're not. And California is rather strict, but how much supervision should there be, and how do you know walking into a place if they're doing the right amount of supervision?
Legally, every state is different in terms of supervision. Some states, have rules like in Colorado, there's a Rule 800 that basically allows physicians to delegate to unlicensed people to do lots of different things, including injections. Some states, like New York, they don't consider laser hair removal the practice of medicine. So in New York, anyone can do laser hair removal.
Really? Okay, I did
Yes.
not know that. Dang.
Yes, it's scary because someone could get
Badly
really,
burned.
really
Yeah.
badly, and it's very hard to fix a burn. Probably impossible if it's a bad burn, right? So it's scary. So I think it's really varies state by state, and a consumer really would not know, like, if the place is operating compliantly. But I think your question about at least asking, like, how long have you worked here? How long have you been doing this? Like, making that part of your small talk as a patient is super important because some people even have fake credentials on the wall. Like every month we subscribe to all these different like medical board things, and they talk about, oh, this physician in Texas was suspended because they pretended to be a physician. So I think it's hard. You can't even trust what the certificate on the wall says as a patient. And a lot of times, a lot of these requirements are so minimal in some states. I think the law hasn't really caught up with how advanced some of these treatments are, that like you could make someone blind or you could make someone permanently burned, and that would be like a career-ending thing for you and a life-ending thing for that person, like good quality of life-ending thing for that person.
Yeah, it's a really scary world out there because people are doing things they're not fully credentialed to do. They're learning off of YouTube and Instagram. Having credentialing and standards of certification might be the ni a nice next step for our industry. What else is trending on the East Coast in New York?
I think I get asked about stem cells all the time and whether.
Yes, let's talk about stem cells a little bit because that's one of my favorite topics, and I think patients really are lost there.
Yeah, I think for me, scientifically, like I'm no expert, so I'm always asking, like, okay, where are they coming from? Are these safe? Like, what's this made out of? But I think stem cells is something that a lot of people are trying to do, like injecting stem cells into somebody's face or injecting stem cells into like their under eyes. I don't know medically even if like, I mean, what is in those stem cells? How do these people even know? Are they reputable stem cells vendors? It
No,
seems
there's
like.
not vendors. Literally, I hope there's not. That is very fraught with difficulty. That falls under the arm of you can do non-FDA approved things with patient consent, right?
Right. Right.
Yeah, but you could just disclose that I'm getting your stem cells from a fetus or an umbilical placenta, whatever, and I'm using a different person, and we're going to clean them up, filter them, and put them in you. And if a patient is okay with that, then is the provider protected?
Sort of, not perfectly. And also depends on what you promised the patient. If you said that, yes, this is off label or this is not FDA approved for injection at all, but if you told them that this is going to cure or help any medical condition, then you're making medical promises to them, and the FDA could still come after you for that, saying like you were treating this as a medication, even if you were at the same time
Because you were
saying,
implying some benefits to be derived after the treatment.
yeah.
Yes, I guess that's why it's kind of cloaked under the guise of it may or may not give you vitality.
Right. Yeah, I think a lot, we what we need is studies to show whether these things actually, work or not. I think before that it's hard to know. For me as a lawyer, I don't know. I just know that the better the paperwork you have with your client, the less promises you make about curing anything, the better off you're going to be. But your insurance is not going to cover it probably, and patients, upon reading the internet, are probably going to get concerned if they have any kind of adverse events.
I think every practice out there needs to take a close look at what they're doing for weight loss shots and how to evolve that into like something that's not going to get you shut down or sued. That's a big one. And then take a look at all your consent forms and decide what procedures are you doing and have we notified all the right people and we put it in all the forms. That's like a big thing that probably every year practices should take inventory of, right? But I want to make sure people can reach out to find you if they're struggling or they have a legal issue or they just want your advice. How do they reach you, Sarah?
They can reach me on our website, which is www.lingialaw.com. It's a bit of a mouthful. And they could also reach us on Instagram, which is Lingia Law, or Facebook, or YouTube. But most people just schedule a free consult on our website. We do have free consultations, so that's the best way.
That's amazing. And Lingia is spelled Lengea, Lingia Law. And
Yes.
this is the amazing Sarah Schickman. I hope to get to see you soon at one of the meetings coming up. Are you coming to Vegas Cosmetic Surgery? You'll be there, right?
Yes, I will.
Okay, so you get to meet some of the masters. We're going to do some off-label injections, and then she's going to talk about all the things that we should not be doing, all you cowboys out there in aesthetics. All right, that's it for now, guys. Don't forget to find me on my Instagram. It's Beauty by Dr. K, DrKay. And our website is the same. It's beautybydrk.com. That's where you can find all of our amazing skincare and our internal radiance products for looking good from the inside out. Love you guys. Stay beautiful.